The following presentation was recorded at the 1997 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
In prison and Hitler's camps. We who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. They have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the freedom to choose one's attitude in any given circumstance, to choose one's own way. Thanksgiving Day editorial. A Thanksgiving Day editorial in the newspaper told of a school teacher who asked her first graders to draw a picture of something they were thankful for. She thought of how little these children from poor neighborhoods actually had to be thankful for, but she knew that most of them would draw pictures of turkeys on tables with food. The teacher was taken back with a picture of Douglas that Douglas handed in, a simple, childish hand. But whose hand? The class was captivated by the abstract image. "I think it must be the hand of God that brings us food," said one child. "A farmer," said another, "because he grows the turkeys." Finally, when the others were back at work, the teacher bent over Douglas's desk and asked, "Whose hand was it?" "Who do you think?" he said. "Todd." "The teachers." She recalled that frequently at recess she'd taken Douglas, a scrubby, forlorn child, by the hand. She often did that with the children, but it meant so much to Douglas. Perhaps this was everyone's Thanksgiving. Not for the material things given to us, but for the chance, in whatever small way, to give to others to hold their hand. A substitute taught one day at a local Christian school. There was this little girl who couldn't walk. She could stand up and walk if you held her hand, and obviously she was used to holding the teacher's hand at break when we went out to break. She wouldn't leave my hand. She'd get a hold of my hand, and as we stood there, she was playing with all the other children. And the way she was doing that was she was telling me all their names and what they were doing. "Now there's Johnny over there," and she was giving me a running commentary on what was going on. I don't think I ever had a little girl touch my heart like she did. And she wouldn't let go of my hand. Here I was, an old man, a little girl. She didn't even know me. But she wanted to hold my hand. The young people at Shively Christian Church, led at the time by youth pastor Dave Stone, were fiercely competitive with their neighbor, Shively Baptist, in all things, especially softball. They were also serious about their Christianity, faithfully attending the summer Bible camp led by the youth pastor. One week, the Bible lesson was about Jesus washing his disciples' feet from John 13. To make the servanthood lesson stick, Pastor Stone divided the kids into groups and told them to go out and find a practical way to be servants. "I want you to be Jesus in the city for the next 2 hours," he said. "If Jesus were here, what would he do? Figure out how he would help people." How many of you ever read the book In His Steps by Sheldon, right? Charles Sheldon. I've probably read that book somewhere between 5 and 10 times, and I hope I read it 5 or 10 times more. Every time I read it, I'm moved by it. 2 hours later, the kids reconvened in Pastor Stone's living room to report what they had done. One group had done 2 hours of yard work for an elderly man. Another group bought ice cream treats and delivered them to several widows in the church. A third group visited a church member in the hospital and gave him a card. Another group went to a nursing home and sang Christmas carols, in August. One elderly resident remarked that it was the warmest Christmas she remembers. But when the fifth group stood up and reported what they had done, everyone groaned. This group had made its way to none other than their arch rival, Shively Baptist, where they had asked their pastor if he knew someone who needed help. The pastor sent them to the home of an elderly woman who needed yard work done. There for 2 hours, they mowed grass, raked the yard, and trimmed hedges. When they were getting ready to leave, the woman called to the group together and thanked them for their hard work. "I don't know how I could get along without you," she said. "You kids at Shively Baptist are always coming to my rescue." "Shively Baptist," interrupted Pastor Stone. "I sure hope you set her straight and told her you were from Shively Christian Church." "Why, no, we didn't," the kids replied. "We didn't think it made any difference." I remember, and I don't remember where I learned this comment, but I trust I will never forget it. There is no limit to what can be done if no one cares who gets the credit. And in your staff, you're a team together. There's no limit to how successful you can be if you only want the Lord to get the credit. I believe that. Now, you're supposed to have questions. Because unless you stop me, we will end no later than 4 o'clock. Maybe you just want to make a comment. We might as well get acquainted. The fun is just beginning. Well, write them down. Two pastors one time were walking towards their church. This was a church in Indiana. I don't know if that makes any difference. And the one that preached there turned to the other one and said, "I don't know why we can't get young people to come to church. They just don't seem to be interested." And you know what they were walking through? They were walking through grass that was 8 to 10 inches high. This other pastor was a friend of mine. He told me about it. And he said, I turned to him and I said, "Well, you might start by mowing the lawn." Do you ever think about that? How clean is your school? The facility. Is there a room needs painting? Maybe you should get some high school students and paint it. You know, few parents will volunteer, but if you ask a parent, you know, we need $50 for some paint and some high school students will paint this room or whatever, you can get the money. We have in our school, we have carpet similar to this, same kind of carpet. It's a little bit different color, and it's used by the church also. And it gets stains all over the carpet. Most of them come on the weekend when we're not there. Somebody drops something on it, whatever. And so periodically, I just clear everything out of the room, and we get all that carpet cleaner stuff and a pile of rags, and I tell the kids, "We're going to clean all these spots off." And you know, they love doing that. I mean, you'll see them race for the rags. Let them clean up the room. I mean, they like a clean room too. I don't think there's any excuse for having a dirty school. That doesn't mean that you're all going to have the best of buildings. It can be clean. And you can have the students help you do it. I realize that this puts an economic burden sometimes. But the first school, in our circles, we didn't have schools until it was 78 or 79. I forget which year it was when we started the first one in our area. And I was involved in that. And you think, well, we need an overhead and we need a typewriter. Does anybody have an overhead and a typewriter? And so somebody will say, well, yeah, I got this thing for $25 a garage sale here. And, you know, a teacher is busy. And we found out right away that having a typewriter that worked today and didn't tomorrow, I'd really be without the typewriter. And we learned that if you're going to buy equipment that children are going to use, buy good equipment or forget it. Because I can buy, at that time I had a Sears typewriter that I paid $200 for or something. This was however long ago it was, almost 20 years ago, 19 years ago. I used that thing for a long time and never had any problems. You take that typewriter to school and within a week, something will be wrong with it. Does that mean that they were destructive? I'm not sure. I don't think they were necessarily, but they were not made to take the beating that students will give them in that kind of use. And I would just encourage you to do things right or don't do it. Doesn't God want us to do things right? And so you need to have an overhead that works. And what we did with reference to typewriters at that time, Olympia made a, I forget the number of it now, it was their top-of-the-line typewriter, and at that time, they cost $1,100 a piece. And there's people in the parent group that have money. And we made it known that we needed three typewriters, and that money showed up. And we bought those three Olympia typewriters for $1,100 a piece, and I think we used them for 5 years, I think it was, before anything ever went wrong with them. What a blessing. I mean, you could send the children into the typing room and they could type. People are all the time wanting to donate things, and you know, you appreciate that. But we learned up front to say, well, does it work? And most of the time, well, I don't know. Or, well, last time I used it, it had trouble with. And we can't use it. That is less embarrassing than having them give it to you and then you got rid of it at a garage sale or something and then they ask you how the typewriter's doing or whatever it is. And I would just encourage you to do things right. That has to do and under facility equipment. Where I had taught, I taught chemistry, taught physics, taught biology. But we didn't do the experiments because we didn't think we had time. And I resolved when I left there and we started another school that I was either going to teach biology, chemistry, physics, and I was going to do the experiments or I wasn't going to do it. I was not going to do it third class. And I have never been happier. Now, there again, it takes some money. But there's people, if they know there's a specific need, you know, if you say the school needs $100, you might not get it. But if you say the school needs $100 for this, there's just, and I'm not faulting anybody, I'm just saying people will come forward. And I have somewhere between $6,000 and $8,000 worth of science equipment that I didn't buy because I don't have $6,000 or $8,000, but a parent did. When I made that known, he said, go buy whatever you need. And it works. And kids love it. Children will learn. They like to do things with their hands. Why do they like to do things with their hands? That's the way God made them. We need to recognize that as teachers. That's one of the rules of teaching and learning. The more a student does with what he learns, the better he learns it. And so it's one thing to talk about a chicken egg. It's another thing to have a picture of a chicken egg. And it's another thing for him to feel a chicken egg and maybe even smell it. So make those needs known and as much as possible, and I realize that needs to be modified in different things, but as much as possible, do things right or don't do it. And I am totally convinced that God will bless that. And that's true of a building. They may not say anything, but there's some, particularly girls, and maybe you ladies won't like this, but somehow it seems to fit the girls the best, and they sure go for it. Anna and some of them, they get their work all done, and I'll say, why don't you girls wash the windows around here? These windows are dirty. They love to do that. Now, if their mother asks them, they may not like it. I don't know. But at school, they like to do those kind of things. Does God care if we go to school and we never wash the windows? Does God care if there's spots on the carpet? Well, you know, I've struggled with that, and there was a time in my life I'd have said, why does God care? Really? But you know, he said he pays attention to every sparrow. I mean, the indications in the Bible are that God pays attention to a lot of detail, doesn't he? Isn't that right? I think he cares. And he may care because it shows our attitude about things. He wants us to be good stewards of what we have. He wants us to take care of it. And I think that is an important lesson. See, while the girls are washing the windows, they're doing more than just washing the windows. They're learning, number one, that that's important to me. And it sure pleases me when they do it. They're learning how to do it, and they're learning to work together. When their mother asks them then at home, it's not a strange thing to them because their teacher at school asks them to do it. I mean, there's all kinds of behavioral and emotional mechanism goes in place when some girls at school wash the windows. You ever think about all that? People are complex things, and it takes a complexity, it takes a many-faceted program to get students plugged in to school. And part of that comes under facility. I don't know what went through your mind when I write facility on here. Nothing? You know, there are always boys that have I'm not an auto mechanic. I want to drive an automobile. I don't care how it is. I just want it to run. I'm not interested in an automobile. And I'm amazed that even freshman boys, how much they know about automobiles. We've had them before change the oil in our cars. They love to go out and do that. If they know what they're doing, you have to be careful, but they mow the lawn, school, have them go out and pick up trash. That's all the things that they can do with their hands. Last thing that we're going to talk about then is this parents students thing. We've talked some about students, but students, we'll do that first since we've talked about that some, then we want to talk about parents. This summer, for the first time, I have one sister that lives very close to me and an older brother, and then I have two brothers that live in Ohio, and our parents are both gone. My mother died about 2 years ago. And we've never gotten together, and we've always talked about it. And so one of them said, well, this is the summer. And so I said, okay, this is the summer. And we met in Colorado Springs. been through it, basically never stopped there. And while we were there, and so we met this summer in Colorado Springs, and we went up to Pikes Peak. I'd never been on Pikes Peak. In fact, none of us had except my wife, and she was there when she was a little girl. We take the Cog Railroad. How many have ever been on that Cog Railroad up Pikes Peak? We take the Cog Railroad, and you're sitting. You know, there's two of you sitting here, and just right there, almost knee to knee, is two more people. And one of them was a mother and a little girl named Krista, 10 years old, I think she was, a little bit shy. And I talked to her, asked her how old she was, and what she liked about school. And she kept talking a little bit more, but she never did really open up, and Barbara Ann talked to her. But I was amazed that when we parted then, she kind of portrayed a little bit different. I was amazed at how friendly she acted, much friendlier than she had in the whole trip up and back. And Barbara Ann, we were in a gift shop then, and my little nephew was with us, who's 7 years old. And Barbara Ann felt somebody put their arm around her leg, and she thought it was Caleb, little nephew, and she looked down, and it was this little girl. She found Barbara Ann in the gift shop and put her arm around her. The reason I tell you that, it's a truth, and it's because it goes back to this thing of love. Children respond to love and attention. That has been demonstrated to me so many times. So many times. That can be your nieces and nephews. You know, I grew up, and maybe some of you will relate to this, and I don't say this to condemn my parents or anything, it's just the way it was. It was kind of the whole culture at that time. I never remember my grandfather touching me or saying one kind word to me. And I had both grandfathers were close. Never, ever. I do not remember that. Well, my grandchildren, my relationship with my grandchildren, I mean, when they come over, they'll come up and put their arm around me, and it's totally different. And I think it's important that even with your nieces and nephews and the children at school, there's power in a touch. Love is transmitted through a touch, appropriate ones. And God made them that way. Did you ever think about, with reference to students, how God did not send us angels? He did not send us animals. He sent us children. And we sometimes, as adults, try to make them adults before it's time for them to be adults. So there's several things that we want to say about children and students before we talk briefly about parents. There's a man, Richmond, California, is in the Bay Area, just about 60 miles from us, and it's a section where it's basically very depressed and poor, a lot of foreigners, and the whole school system is a mess. This man, it was an article in the paper just recently, this man had made a lot of money in the stock market. He was a multimillionaire, and for whatever reason, he lived close to this city. And I don't know what all motivated him, but 7 years ago, he took a fifth grade class in the worst school that he could find in Richmond, California. And he told this fifth grade class, he said, if you will work hard and follow my program, meaning they had to do their homework every day, they had to stay after school and do certain things, and he provided teachers for them, tutors after school, all at his own expense. He said, if you will do what I ask you to do, When you graduate from high school and you get accepted into a college, I'll pay for your education. He thought a few of them would take him up. Well, almost the whole class did, and that class just graduated from high school this year, and 30 of them, unknown to this school of anybody going to college, 30 of them got accepted into universities. And they gave the testimony of these children. They make you cry. This man cared. That was the message. Obviously, he had the money, but he could have spent it on himself. They were totally moved by this man caring for them. And 30 of them are going to college, and he's going to pay the whole bill. It's going to cost him almost $1 million. Children, and the reason I tell you that, children can be motivated to work. Now, I know that's, I say that knowing very well that I've had some failures. But we have to believe that they can be motivated. In some cases, it may take money on the part of the parents, but children are motivatable. They have to experience success. Success grows on success. And you take this child, just think about it. You take this child, they are not academically inclined, and their peers are. They come to school every day knowing before they get there that the day is going to be a failure. Wouldn't that be exciting to wake up to? Would you go to work with such a job as that, knowing that every day you wasn't going to please your boss, he was going to ask you to do more than you got done, and at the end of the day, you had to take some work home? Would you go to work like that? I don't think we would. And somehow, and I don't have all the tricks to this, but I know that it takes ingenuity on the part of a teacher, but we need to find every day for every child some little niche where they experience success. And maybe with the strategies at the end and through all this, we'll talk about, I've done many, many things. A couple girls that are married now told me recently, we go to grandma's and she give us a list of work to do and we did it. And that aggravated our mother. Our mother asked us one day, they was telling me this just in the last year, and they're 35, 40 years old. She said, Mother asked us one day, you go to grandma's and you do what she asks you to do. I give you a list to do and you won't do it. I got to track you down. And she said, why? And there is a truth in what those girls answered that I think every one of us ought to realize. They said, when we get done with grandma's list, she lets us play. If we finish your list, guess what? She just makes it longer. They're never done. And I've thought a lot about that with reference to school, and I've tried to apply that last year. Even a child that doesn't get their work done typically, they need time when they're done, when it's okay to play. Now, does that sound really loose? They're children. Have we taken the childhood out of children? That really hit me hard. Have we taken the childhood out of children? Are we not allowing them to be children? Are we requiring more of them than God would require? You say, well, sometime they have to learn what 3 times 4 is and what a verb is. I know that's true. Blessing on thee, little man, barefoot boy with cheek of tan, with thy turned up pantaloons and thy merrily whistled tunes, with thy red lip redder still, kissed by strawberries on the hill, with the sunshine on thy face, through thy torn brims, jaunted grace. From my heart I give thee joy, I was once a barefoot boy. Prince, thou art the grown-up man, only as Republican. Let the million-dollar ride, barefoot trudging at thy side. Thou hast more than he can buy, in the reach of ear and eye, outward sunshine, inward joy, blessing on thee, barefoot boy. Oh, for boyhood's time in June, crowding years in one brief moon. Health that mocks the doctor's rules, no, sleep that wakes in laughing day. Health that mocks the doctor's rules, knowledge never learned in schools. Of the wild bee's morning chase, of the wildflower's time and place, flight and foul and habitude of the tenant of the wood. How the tortoise bears his shell, how the woodchuck digs his cell, and the ground mole sinks his well, how the robin feeds her young, and the oriole's nest is hung. Where the whitest lilies blow, where the freshest berries grow, where the ground nut trails its vine, and where the wood grape clusters shine, of the black wasp's cunning way, mason of her walls of clay, and the architectural plan of gray hornet artisan. For stewing books and tasks, nature answers all he asks. Hand in hand with her he walks, face to face with her he talks. For my sport the squirrel played, for my sport plied the snouted mole his spade, for my taste the blackberry cone tumbled over hedge and cone. Laughed the brook for my delight, through the day and through the night, whispering at the garden wall, talk with me. From fall to fall, mine the sand-rim pickerel pond, mine the walnut slopes beyond, mine unbending orchard trees, apples of Hesperides. Still as my horizons grew, larger grew my riches too. All the world I saw anew seemed a complex Chinese toy fashioned for a barefoot boy. Oh, for festal dainty spread, like my bowl of milk and bread, pewter spoon and bowl of wood on the doorstone, gray and rude, o'er me like a regal tent, cloudy ribbed, the sunset bent, looped in many a wind-swung fold, while for music came the play of the pied frog orchestra, and to light the noisy choir, lit the fly his lamp of fire. I was monarch, pomp and joy, waited on the barefoot boy. Cheerily then, my little man, live and laugh as boyhood can, though the flinty slopes be hard, and the stubble speared the new-mown sword, every morn shall lead thee through fresh baptisms of the dew. Every evening from thy feet shall a cool wind kiss the heat. All too soon these feet must hide in the prison cells of pride, like the colts for work be shod. In the prison cells of pride, like lose the freedom of the sod, like the colts for work be shod, made to tread the mills of toil up and down in ceaseless moil. Happy, if their track be found, never on forbidden ground. Happy, if they sink not in quick and treacherous sands of sin. Ah, that thou couldst know thy joy ere it passes, barefoot boy. Have we taken the childhood out of childhood? I think we have. I think our society, and if we're not careful, we have. Let me give you an example. There are lizards. You know, I grew up, my father was born where I live now. And I always knew there were lizards. You know, sea lizards. I guess I played with them. I did. I played with them when I was a boy. There's a group of boys and girls at our school. I am amazed at how many lizards they can find. And they find all kinds of them that I didn't even know existed. And at break time and at lunchtime, we all have time, a hard time getting them in sometime. They're out there, I mean, they are turning under every blade of grass, every rock, all around the fence posts. They are looking everywhere for lizards. And that can be an aggravation because it makes them late to class. This one boy, you've probably seen him do this. I mean, he puts one up to his ear and it bites it, and so he comes walking into class with two lizards hanging from his ears. Really? I mean, they're in their shirt pockets and they're playing with them at their offices. We played with them some, but I have never seen so many children so taken in by lizards. But you know, that's good for them, isn't it? Let them play. Let them enjoy lizards. There's all kinds of things If we're not careful as Christian teachers, boy, we want them to learn this lesson. We want them to do this and this. And I know they have to learn. But they're children. I'm not a baseball fan, but I remember years ago there was a pitcher who pitched, I think, for, well, I don't know. Anyway, his name was Robin Roberts. And he was a famous pitcher. And he, I think he, it's either four or six boys he ended up with. He's the father of, I'll say four boys, because I forget exactly. And he wrote an article one time that I read. And that's the only reason I remember all this, because he wrote this article and I read it. And he said he was dead set against his boys playing Little League baseball. And here was a famous professional pitcher. He did not let his boys play Little League baseball. And the reason? He said children do not need that pressure. They need to be children. They need to play ball in the sandlot just for the fun of it, not to win. I thought that was pretty wise. They need to be children. As Christian teachers, are we letting our children be children? They need to experience some of that at school. Now, there's different ways that you can do that. And one way you can do it is, I did this a couple times last year. Probably do it a couple times this year. Just take a Friday off. And I concocted a whole bunch of experiments to do. The science experiments that would interest them. You know, I mean, you have to have something spectacular. How many of you ever did anything with pure sodium, solid sodium? I bought a, you know, it's expensive. I bought a little, it cuts about like cheese. It's a metal. You buy it, and I bought a little jar of solid sodium, and you put that in water, and it explodes. Well, I don't know if you know it or not, but children love things that explode. I mean, they were, you can do all kinds of things. And I had all day long, that's all we did. Just take the day off, and we just did things that I knew would interest them. Now, I know, and I want to say this, I'll probably say it many, many times. There's a time they have to learn what a verb is and they have to learn what a noun is. But I want to ask you, when your children are through with their school year, what do they remember? They remember those extra things that you did. And that sets the tone and the mood and the attitude for that child in the classroom. It sets their attitude toward you. Do you realize that in one or two days out of the year, and even less, you can change the attitude of the children? And so they'll remember. When I see parents later on, and or children, what do they mention? Do they mention when we learned about math or we learned about the Revolutionary War? No, they remember that sodium exploding in the bucket of cold water. That's what they remember. Is that bad? No. Does that mean they didn't learn what a verb was? No. But the thing that was prominent in their mind was this extra thing that you did. And that's children. That's true in your homes. You need to give them a free time. You need to let the things that interest them have free course. You need to go the extra mile with all kinds of things. They're social creatures. I was watching some of them play the other day, some of my grandchildren. And they were just a tumbling and a tussling and a pushing each other and a giggling and a carrying on. And if you're trying to read, you can say, you know, be quiet. Can't you straighten up? And I watched them and I thought, you know, that doesn't look like a bunch of puppies playing. And then I thought, well, dogs are social creatures. These children are just social creatures. And at school, the teachers get upset, you know, they're standing in line, one poking another one, and they're doing all kinds of things. They're children. Now, I believe in manners, and I believe in things being under control, But I'm just asking you, are we letting them be children? They're social creatures. That's the way God made them. And I like things in order as well as anybody, but I'm not sure God made children in fifth grade just to stand in line and keep their hands to themselves. You think they did? You know, and why can't they do that? Well, I don't know, but I don't think that's the way God made them. Now, you can't have them tripping and kicking, and I know there's a limit, but there's a limit both ways. And I just want to say again, God didn't send us angels. He sent us children. And so our mission is to teach these children. And you say, well, they get on my nerves, and they do this thing, and I don't like this. In the story of George Washington Carver that I read recently, and I'd read the story different times, but somewhere I picked up a book someplace, I don't remember where, and I read this story. And he was invited to speak at the Georgia legislature. And he got there. How many of you ever read this story? He got there, and they wouldn't let him in. Because he's a black man. He has his two briefcases loaded down with the stuff that he's coming to show them, you know, all the things he'd learned, and he knew they needed to know what he knew. And he'd been invited to come and speak, and wouldn't let him in. In fact, first they told him the meeting was down the street, so he picks his stuff up and goes down. She gets down there, and he said, no, it's back down there, and he gets back down there. The guy won't let him in. And he said, well, they invited me here, and he said, would you go talk to so-and-so? And they did. So they made him go back to round in the back and go up the back way to the meeting. He gets in the meeting, and they say, you got 10 minutes. Well, he'd come all the way, lugged all his stuff, 10 minutes. That was all right with him because he knew. And once he got started. And so he made this presentation. I think it lasted 2 hours, something like that. Long time. I mean, they were totally fascinated by what they learned, by what this man had to tell them. Anyway, he went back and he told a friend about that, and a friend said, why'd you put up with that? Why didn't you just leave? And I hope I never forget his answer. My mission is more important than I am. And isn't that really the story of Jesus Christ? He was willing to die on the cross. His mission, saving you and me, was more important than he was. As teachers, our mission, sending these children on their way with a reasonable, healthy education and a good attitude and relationship with God. And I'm not willing to spend some extra time, some extra money, some extra tears to send these children on their way. Our mission is more important than we are. People say, you're going to get ulcers doing that. And I say, well, so what? Children have to learn that the royal road to success is paved with work. Young man, you're not getting your work done, and I cannot do it for you. I will help you. If you want to stay after school, I will stay after school with you. I will take you home after school. I will do whatever, but you need to understand one thing for sure, young man, that you have to do the work. That's one thing I cannot do for you. I'll bring you a glass of iced tea while you do it. I've told him that. But you have to do the work. There is no out for that. You cannot learn what 3 times 4 is for another student, for a student. They have to learn it. And the sooner they learn that, the God that we serve is a God of work. Any comments, any questions? We're going to talk about parents. Yes.
Talking about homework a lot, and I don't care you myself, but a lot of us are in situations where the children have other chores to do at home and don't have as much homework. We have a hard time getting through the books here.
Mm-hmm. Anybody have an answer to that?
Who owns a child?
I'm going to give you my answer. It's not the best one.
Who owns a child?
The parent. The parent. I don't own a child. So I get the parent together, and I am a servant of the parent. And I say, Johnny has not been getting his homework done, his work done at school, and he has homework. Now, there's two choices. Either he does the homework, or he gets it. There's three, really. Or he gets it done at school, or it doesn't get done. And if you have work for him to do at home, and he doesn't get it done, then he's going to drop behind. But the child is yours, and if that's your goal for the child, then I'm going to be party to that. But the parent needs to know that if the child doesn't do the work, either at home or at school, then he's going to get behind. And if the parent is willing to live with that, who am I? I am not going to fight the parent. You see what I'm saying? That responsibility is really the parent's. They don't do the homework. Don't you think that's right? That's what it is, homework. It's not schoolwork. You know, that's one thing a parent will try to put that responsibility on the teacher. I mean, I have to do it. But my child doesn't do his homework. What are you going to do? I said, I'm not going to do anything. What are you going to do? You know, if you want some suggestions, I can give you some suggestions and we'll talk about some of those. But that's what it is homework. I'm not at home. And so, if you don't want him to do it, then you need to make measures that he gets it done at school. We're doing all we can. But he doodles a lot and stares out the window, whatever. He can get it done at school. And I will help him do it at school. And I had parents say, well, we have work at home for our children, and if they get behind, that's just the way it's going to be. And I say, well, that's just the way it's going to be then. I have more of them say, we're going to see that he gets his work done at school. And I say, good, then let's talk about how we're going to do that, and I'll help you. That's my solution. But I don't think, I'll just put it that way, I have never been successful in fighting the student and the parent. I can handle the student. And I've never seen it unsuccessful when me and the parent agrees we can handle the student. I don't know if that answers your question or not. I refuse to be responsible for them doing the homework at home. That's the parent's responsibility. Anything else? Anybody have any comments on that? I mean, is there another answer? Yes.
Some teachers assign homework, like especially assigned to do at home.
Especially what?
Just homework, just left over from the day that's uh-huh. assigned as tough to do at home for background work.
Oh, well, that depends on what kind of curriculum you're using. We use a mix, by the way, in our school. We use individualized. We use Christian Light for, say, probably about 70% of what we do. When I lecture out of a Becca, Bob Jones, whatever. In some of the classes, even in the lower grades, we use other things. So we use a combination. Typical homework with individualized curriculum is that they didn't get all their pages in the math done, so they have a page of math to do. And so that goes home with them. The other kind is in the science light units. There's some of those experiments. Maybe you don't have all the stuff. Maybe you don't have the time. And so you can make those optional at home if they want to do them at home. So you can send them home as optional work, you know.
It'd be great.
If it's done at home, I like to have the parent sign it. I think we need to resist letting the teacher be totally responsible for a child's learning.
I think parents ought to be involved in their children. I think that is a huge problem with some children. They don't see their parents involved. And so anytime I can, I like to put that on the parent. Yes?
So how do you get the parent involved when the parent comes to the teacher? You know, they send the children to school and they don't really see education as a big necessity.
Oh, I understand exactly what you're saying. We have two parent conferences a year, and I'm very definitive about that. And if that's the parent's stance, again, they're taking a responsibility different than the one that I would want them to take. But again, it's their child. You can encourage them to do things different. But you know, I used to, I still stay awake a lot at night, as Barbara Ann would testify. That's just the way I am. I get to thinking about something in the middle of the night and I can't sleep. And literally some nights I basically don't get any sleep. But it helped me when I realized one day, did Jesus cure and turn everybody around that he met and approached him? So what makes me think I can? You know, I was always kind of on a guilt trip because I couldn't get this student turned around like I thought he ought to be turned around. I didn't have, it seemed like I should have had the right words. And so it always went through my mind, if I had the right words and the right look on my face and the right timing and all this, there must be an answer. And then I realized, Jesus didn't. He didn't. Rich young ruler, Luke, just turned and walked away. Jesus didn't say, hey, wait a minute, let me reword that. You know, let him go. And I think there's a time when we have to just let it go. Yes?
Just like to comment on homework. One of the book reports we did in the last 3 week class was on homework. And that book mentioned that homework specifically to be done at home usually benefits high school students most, junior high, half as much in elementary, not at all. It's a very statement as far as I don't have a lot of support. That is for homework that is specifically intended to be done at home.
Yeah, obviously, when you're in high school or college, in a way, it's not homework in that it's not work that didn't get done and should have gotten done. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, see the purpose of it.
Here's a book, Winning the Homework War. It's got a lot of good thoughts in it. I'm not going to take time now to read it. All different kind of cases and just pick things up. Well, I've talked a lot about parents, and we got 12 minutes left. We've kind of incorporated this. I would just encourage you with reference to parents to go out of your way. Again, your mission is more important than you are. And go out of your way to keep communication with them. I would say most of my biggest problems with parents have come about because I've failed to have as prompt a communication about some problem. They are very quick to bring that up. And I'm going to warn you right now that a parent can make mistake one, mistake two, mistake three, mistake four, and you're supposed to overlook it. But you make a mistake, guess what happens? Seriously, I'm talking about good. They are very keen to point out, you know, they're paying your wages and you didn't. They are very, and I do not want to be too negative about this, but I found them fairly unforgiving. They don't give a teacher a lot of leeway. Apparent, it happened over Easter, and it happened on a Friday, and the next week was Easter vacation, and they were gone for a couple days, and it was the end of the following week, that vacation week, and they weren't coming back to school anyway before I got a hold of them, and the father was upset with me. Well, your first reaction is, hey, wait a minute. But you know what? I've never found that reaction successful. You know what I find successful? Is just say, you know, Jose, you're right. I should have called you sooner. I could point out that he was gone. I could point out that it was Easter time. I could point out that it didn't make any difference anyway because they weren't coming to school. But I'm the only way I'm going to win that war is to say, you're right. And that's what I did. I just said, you know, he comes on me. He sat for 2 hours in my office. And I said, you know, you're right. I didn't call you as soon as I should have. And then what's he going to say? Well, hallelujah, you know. But really, and they were going to pull all their children out. And I talked to him. It wasn't just because of that, but that was kind of, and I talked to him and I said, hey, it's your children, whatever. I just want to help them. And if you want to send them to another Christian school, which is what they're going to do, I said, God bless you. I'll help you, whatever I can do. And I just let it rest. And about a week before we left here, they called me and said they weren't going to do that. They were going to send them back. Now, if I would have said, wait a minute, that's your fault too, those children wouldn't be coming back. I have absolutely no doubt about it. And that's part of dealing with parents. It takes as much patience dealing with parents as it does children. In one way more, because you think these people are adults, you know, and so you're not quite prepared. Am I being too negative about all this? Well, what are you thinking? I'm talking about the problem areas. Really, with most parents, I find them very supportive. One of the biggest problems we had this year, every time I talked to that father, right in front of the boy, he says, you're the boss in that school, and my boy's going to do whatever you say. Because I think you're a godly man, and you're being fair with him. And he looks at the boy, and he said, I want you to obey him and do exactly what he tells you to do. Every time we have a problem, that's the kind of parent he is. Well, I can handle a lot of problems like that, right? Because the father's on my side. But communication. You have parent conferences. We have two a year. And I have it all outlined. And you need to be absolutely... There is no point. That is a. How many of you like parent conferences? I dislike them very, very much. I dread them like, oh, get out. Really, I do. We have them at night, and I schedule them an hour apart. Because if I'm going to go to all the work to get a parent to school and the children, I always have the children come. I tell them, no secrets. Anything I tell your parents, you're going to know exactly what it is, good or bad. And that was difficult for me at first. It's difficult, you know, maybe to tell a parent something right in front of the child. But I believe that's the way to do it. And I just put all my courage in one lump, and whatever I got to say, I say it, and I encourage them to say whatever they have to say. And I find overwhelming a positive response to that. Does a parent want to give up an evening, come to a parent conference, and, you know, Joe's doing fine, and, you know, Mary's doing fine, and you just have wonderful children, and I'm so glad you come. I mean, what are they thinking? And so I have it all listed out there, exactly what they're doing. And you ought to always leave them with some place where the child could improve. Not in a real negative way. Just say, you know, Anna, I'll pick on Anna because she's an excellent student. But she can be kind of holier than thou. I didn't know if you knew little girls could be that way or not. And, you know, and I tell the parent right in front of Anna. You know, she gets a little bit know-it-all with the other girls sometimes. She's a dear girl. Her and I are great friends. But it's true. She does. And she needs to know that. And she needs to know that I know it. And she needs to know that her parents know it. And she needs to know that I've told her parents. And she needs to know that her parents heard it. Isn't that right? Is that easy to do? Well, it isn't for me. But if I'm going to have a parent conference and do all this, I'm going to be very honest about it. Always tell them something their child does good. And then, if there are problems, and I think someplace back here under management, maybe we go into this more, if there are problems, when they leave, they need to, if there is anything that they wish to pursue with reference to that conference, they need to know it. And these, the last thing you need to do is say, now remember, you're going to whatever. Yes.
Question. Items like that you bring up at a parent conference, would those be things that you had already discussed with the child, if the child knows you already feel this way? Did you save them till the parent conference to let the child know as well?
It would be fairly rare that the child didn't already know that. I can't think of anything that wouldn't. I think they know how I feel about them because I talk to them. Yes.
Does it ever come up that the parents would want to discuss the problem before they approach the child?
Oh. There are times, fairly rare. I doubt if it happens once a year, but I'm saying that rare. When there are things that we'll ask the child to leave and there may be something we want to talk about before we talk or even afterwards that we want to talk about. Yeah, there's times. And the child will respect that. But I guess I'm very sensitive about the child thinking that I'm telling the parent something and it's some secret and they don't know what it is. I just like to be open. I like for them to know exactly how I feel. And I think we always think of it in the negative, but I think it's good for them also to hear me tell the parent that, you know.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.